We're back for part two of the Audio Drama Production Podcast's 100th episode, which is actually now episode 101. If you're looking for a large collection of audio drama creators to give you hints, tips, and advice about making this stuff, then you might just have arrived in the right place. Okay, a colossal amount of great content to get through on this episode, so I'm going to keep out the way as much as possible. Just like last episode, the clips are in no particular order, aside from the first one. We're going to kick off with someone whose show introduced Robert and I to modern audio drama back in the day, and who's been an ever-present source of advice, inspiration, and entertainment ever since.
Hi, I'm Casey Whalen, the writer and director of We're Alive. And this is the advice I would have given myself before I started making audio dramas. First and foremost, before I ever started making audio dramas, I would have told myself a few things. Number one is to get everything in contract before you begin something. This goes for everybody that works on a production, because guess what? If you run into problems down the road, it's always good to fall back on some sort of paper. And I would have loved to have known all the differences between what rights are what things, and the differences between what contracts can hold property rights to intellectual property, meaning your story and characters, versus podcast or audio production materials, synchronous licenses, that kind of thing. So get it all in writing. Even if you're working with friends, do it. It makes your life a whole lot easier. And it seems to be that everybody who has gone into a larger production seems to give this advice to people who are starting out, because it ends up being true. And it ends up being true if you become successful. So always be on the lookout for, you know, making sure you get all those things in writing and everything's taken care of there. Because even if it is not perfect, even if you don't have like the best, you use a form online that you just found from nowhere, or, you know, some sort of legal representation fee service that's online, it's always good to go through something like that just to have something to protect you. Because if you have nothing, even if you don't have a scribbled on napkin, you can really set yourself up for some issues down the road. So that's my first piece of advice. My second piece of advice for somebody who's first starting out in audio drama, maybe not myself, but maybe for other people, is to know where you're going before you start. That was something that I was really adamant on, and I had an idea of where I wanted to go before the initial concept went. And I think it's very important, because you're starting on a journey through your story. And if you don't have a destination, your listeners are going to know, and it's going to feel like you don't have a destination. Lost. So just be aware of, it is not always about the journey. You have to make sure you're actually going someplace, because that's really what the listeners and audience want to know, is where does this go when it's over? One thing I would have given myself the advice of early on is the two-take minimum when creating an audio drama. There would be times where I was pushed for time in recording sessions and things like that, where I only got one pass at certain scenes because I thought that they nailed it in the room. And unfortunately, like, I would run into some weird technical issue with a line or a word or something that I could really have used just a fragment of even just a syllable from another take to be able to like match it up and make it work. So that is something that I would definitely say is probably something that you really need to work on, is getting that second take, getting that safety net to fall back on. Because if you only have one take, you're setting yourself up for potential disaster later on, because a lot of the times you're not going to be able to get those people back together to record, or it's just going to become incredibly troublesome to do many sections all over again. Yes, pickup sessions can happen and they do help in the end, but ultimately two takes could help you avert disaster.
Hi, I'm Chris Jarvis from www.radiotheatreworkshop.com. I'm writer-producer of the Elite Dangerous fan series Escape Velocity and the official Chaos Reborn full cast audio tie-in. I think if I could go back and give myself advice for starting out, I'd tell myself that it all takes much longer than I ever estimate. That's a big one. I don't think I've ever estimated a project on time. I am slowly getting better, but it's difficult. I always tell people not to get hung up on equipment. You know, if you want to get started with audio drama, I get email after email from people asking for advice on microphones, to which I have to hold up my hand and profess a certain amount of ignorance. When, you know, what people really need to ensure is that, for me, is that they have a good recording environment. Low background noise, soft furnishings over as many hard surfaces as possible, just some thought about, you know, which way are my actors facing and where is their sound going to bounce. These are all things which can get great recordings from a pretty modest setup. Whereas, you know, you can buy the most expensive microphone in the world and it won't give you good recordings if you're in a room with, you know, plaster walls and a wooden floor. But I think my main advice would have been to myself to just go for it much sooner than I did. You know, I wasted a lot of time waiting for somebody that I saw as, you know, more skilled to kind of, you know, either train me up or you know, give me a job or employ me. Whereas actually, when I eventually experimented with it, I found that getting voices into a microphone and edited into something resembling a drama is actually, you know, pretty straightforward. I mean, not to underestimate, you know, what we all do, because it's extremely hard, but I think we challenge ourselves to improve production and technique and raise our skills and results. But ultimately, you know, getting those first projects done and experimenting and getting stories out there, you know, it should be an iterative experimental process. So don't wait for the perfect setup to come your way. Just try it. Try it with what you've got. Try it with, you know, the people around you, and just get those stories recorded and edited and just see what they sound like. And then you've got something that you can work from and improve and, you know, start getting some really great drama out there, because we all want to hear it.
Hi everyone, this is Avi Ziv of the Stories of Mahabharata. The guys at the Audio Drama Production Podcast asked me to record some tips. So here we go. I'm going to tell you how to kick up your scrambled eggs. Yep, you heard right, your scrambled eggs. So this is what you do. You beat the eggs real well, just as you'd normally do, but before you put them in the pan, you mix in about a teaspoon of cream cheese into the beaten eggs. Mix it really well and then pour it in the pan and proceed as usual. You will not believe how much creamier and smoother your eggs will be. Now, you know, this tip is really not about scrambled eggs per se. I mean, it is, but really is about passion. And I happen to have a passion for cooking. One day I was searching YouTube and I came across the 10-minute cooking school of Sin City Breakfast Tacos. Now, this video was put together by Roberto Rodriguez, who you may know is a movie director who made his debut with the movie El Mariachi, which he produced with a budget of $7,000. It will show you the incredible skill in editing and the passion that this guy has. And this is inspiring. And I think we all need inspiration in order to get us motivated to do the very best that we can. So let's talk about evaluating our own work. You know how when we're in the creative zone, we have great ideas coming into our head right and left, and we're working furiously. We're putting them down on tape. We fall in love with them. And that is a problem. You cannot fall in love with your work. I realize this is a human thing. It's an ego thing. But my experience shows me that at the moment of creation, our passion and excitement does not allow us to pull up and see how this piece of creation fits into the overall story, into the overall mix, whether it's helping or not. So be prepared to come back the next day or the day after with fresh ears and with a willingness to cut a lot, sometimes scrap everything that you've done if necessary, and take another stab at it. Well, friends, I'm almost out of here. You know that this business that we're in doesn't have a lot of money, and there is this expectation that you're going to be working on somebody else's project without getting paid for it. The question is, how do we reconcile that with our own sense of self-worth, with the skills we believe that we have, or in the very least, with the great taste that most of us have for sure because we are avid listeners? So if we look at it from the point of view of learning, then working for free should give us a real learning experience. In other words, the burden of teaching us something should be placed on the people who are employing us, because we are not simple hands that are paid money. The expectation is that we work for free. If we're mostly in a learning position, then they need to teach us in a material way. Now, on the other hand, if we have some experience, or maybe a lot of experience, and we believe that we can hit the ground running and we can contribute to a project, and yet we're being asked to work for free, then the currency ought to be creative freedom. In other words, if they can't pay us to do the work, then we need to have an area of responsibility, and it can be discussed about how large or how small, but we have to have an area of responsibility where we can use our creative senses and come up with original ideas without being micromanaged. And this is something that I think has to be discussed upfront. I think people have to be honest about it, and I think the expectation has to be clear so that a real positive collaborative effort can result from that.
Right, let's go to Brazil and catch up with Danilo Battistini.
Advice I'd give myself before I started making audio drama: listen to other audio dramas. There are many good audio dramas you can find on iTunes or whatever. You type audio dramas on Google and you find a lot. You can also ask for people who work with it, who listen to it, and okay, there you have many options of audio dramas to listen to. So, it's a good thing to have knowledge about what people are producing. So you have different kind of audio dramas on your mind when you start writing, producing, or thinking about starting one. Also, if you're starting, try to think that it doesn't necessarily need to be the best audio drama in the world. But don't try to make your gold audio drama on the first one. Try to make something that you feel comfortable with, so that you learn the tools. Try to do something that you feel comfortable producing or writing, something that you like. And then from that, you will start growing your knowledge on it. You have more skill when you start producing different things. Then you try to produce different things. Then you try to write different things. But first, I think it's good to do something that makes you comfortable, something that you will go for it. If you like comedies, try to write a comedy first. If you like horror, try to write a horror. If you like noir police action, try to do something like that. So you will have a good idea about on your first one, on how you produce it. Like, okay, I take this amount of time to do something, to write something. I take this amount of time to find people to record something. I discover that this is not the best way to record someone. I think that I should try to find someone to do a better design cover when I'm trying to post it on Facebook, post it on SoundCloud, so it has more attention to it. But do something that you like first. And then start challenging yourself doing other stuff.
Hi, this is Brian Lincoln, producer of Hidden Harbor Mysteries and currently working on a show called Relative Worlds. I wanted to say congratulations for 100 episodes for the Audio Drama Production Podcast. It's really an incredible community. There's such a diverse set of backgrounds and ideas for what audio drama is. And I think when we're all on our islands making our own thing without being fully aware of each other, I think it limits the potential of audio drama as a whole. So I think this communication has been really important. So thanks again, and I will continue to be listening. So the topic of the day is to consider what I would say to myself if I were to go back in time and advise myself right when I was about to begin making my first audio drama production. I'm going to say that would be Hidden Harbor Mysteries, because I worked on HG World before that, but as a line editor. So I would say my first real production was Hidden Harbor Mysteries. I learned a lot doing that show. I really enjoyed it. There were really some incredible performances I was thrilled to get, and there were also some stressful moments having to replace cast members and things like that. So before I give my advice, I'm going to play a brief clip from the show so you get a sense of what my production level was at the time.
No, get away!
Who are you to command spirits? I am more powerful now than ever. Thanks to you, my fight for justice will never weaken, never sleep, never pause. Your empire is dust.
I know you're not a spirit. Your trickery, your mind games do not work on me. I am a disciple of Malsut and Bazul Khan.
Then you are the student of fools. It seems I brought the mistress to her knees.
So my advice is simple. Put whatever time you can before you start into figuring out your production flow. That involves everything from sort of the levels you're recording at, what kinds of filters you're going to be putting over voices, just having a good sense of how everything's going to mix together. The more idea you have of what you want when you start, and the less figuring out you're doing as you go along with a project, the less likely you are to end up with a show spanning multiple episodes that is way better at the end than it was at the beginning. My advice is to play around, practice on something smaller, and figure out your workflow. Have a set of notes that really line things up so you know exactly what your steps are in making something. Because producing something like this isn't just starting at minute one and then working through to the end, like getting the first minute right and then moving to the second minute, getting that right, moving to the third minute, getting that right. Sounds good, but that's not how it works. Just like an author doesn't start a novel on page one and finish on page, 300, having written the perfect page one, then the perfect page two, then the perfect page three. They do a rough draft, they go through, they edit, they make changes. There's a whole process to going from the rough version to the edited version to the mixed version to the mastered version. You need to learn all of those steps, know how they fit together. So you're not wasting your time trying to tweak how something sounds when you put music on it later and you can't hear anything. So you need to know how the pieces fit together. And that comes through practice. And by doing that, you can focus on getting each step done the way you need it to be done and having a process that's much more efficient. If you're just kind of random walking and trying to do what sounds good in the moment, every time you make a big change or addition or you tweak something, it might affect how everything fits together. So that's my advice, is figure out your workflow in something smaller and stick to it for that show. And then when you do the next thing, take what you learned and make a new workflow. That's my advice. That's what I think about it. I think that's more helpful to give general tips, since everyone's going to find their own way to do it. I can't tell you what exactly you want to do with EQ. I can't tell you exactly what you want to do in order to make everyone sound like they're in the same room, how much panning is right or wrong. I really think everyone has to use their own creative instincts in order to make a show as good as they can make it. And there's no one way to do anything. but you have to figure out what your style is, and you have to sort of narrow down on that and be consistent with it once you get there. The better you do at that, the more likely it is that your show is going to come out of the gate strong. Thank you very much to the Audio Drama Production Podcast guys. I think having this kind of an environment where we're all communicating with each other and having a chance to learn from each other, I think that's great. Just be careful about thinking of somebody as being where the answers come from, because everybody's going to have a different set of what's right to do based on your strengths and based on what you want from this stuff. So, wow, I'm really good at turning a quick answer into a long one. I'll let you guys go. Check out Hidden Harbor Mysteries if you haven't listened to it. There is a website for Relative Worlds, relativeworlds.com. You can sign up for a mailing list there if you want to get information when that show's coming out. There's some artwork as well, and some voice samples of the characters if you want to get a sense of what's coming. But again, that's not coming out until it's done. Thank you very much.
Hello, I'm Fiona Thrale. I'm a voice actor and narrator, and I've also written and produced for Pendant Audio and Cooperantum Audio. What I would recommend to anyone wanting to start out in the voice acting side of things in audio drama is to look at the technical side of things and really go into it in as much depth, or rather more, than you think you're capable of. If you're coming from an arts side of things, and maybe you're interested in drama and you've had some training in acting, then it can be incredibly intimidating looking at that technical side of things. I certainly was completely positive that I could never get my head around that kind of thing. I had a look at a door and it was like the controls to a spacecraft. It was completely out of anything in my comfort zone. But what I found over the years is actually it is possible, it is understandable, even if you're not kind of a scientific bent. And in fact, it's vital for two reasons. First of all, to get the best environment for your voice and for your particular sound space, so that you don't sound like you're coming out of the back end of a tin can. It's also good to have that overview of what's coming next and what the producers are looking for, so that you can work really in sync with them. And of course, to get parts in the first place with audio dramas that are getting better and better in their sound quality all the time. So if you're recording from home, you really do need to have that good setup in the first place. For the process, I would definitely recommend looking up punch and roll technique. I personally use Studio One because it's dead easy in that, but there are various other doors that also do it, so have a look around and see which one works best for you. But if you've got a lot of lines, it will cut your process time dramatically. There are so many resources out there now, and ones that are actually tailored to audio drama. This very podcast itself, if you go back through the Audio Drama Production Podcast episodes, they're a fantastic resource of tips and information that really cover all of the basics that you could need to do audio drama. Obviously, have a look on social media to see what kind of support groups there are for voice actors and people working in audio drama. There are videos all over the place for different doors and how to use aspects of them. Again, if you focus on the spoken word ones, then you get more detailed information about that. You could even join a MOOC course, which are run by universities through places like Coursera, and which offer courses in sound design, audio engineering, that kind of thing. And they're cut into very small chunks, which is really helpful. Again, if you don't have that kind of technical background, it does actually make it much, much more manageable. So don't be put off at all. And yeah, it is really, really worthwhile. And if I could go back in time and present myself with that information a lot quicker in one big chunk, I definitely would have done. All the best to you if you're actually starting out now. Take the plunge. It is a brilliant art form. It is such a lovely, warm and helpful community. So once you've got all that behind you, all you need is your microphone and, of course, a pair of stylish sunglasses. Happy birthday, ADPP.
Hi, Matthew and Robert. It's Rich from Hadron Gospel Hour. I just wanted to wish you guys both a very happy life day. No, that's not what I wanted to do. I want to congratulate you on 100 episodes, which is phenomenal. And I think we'll probably get there with Hadron by maybe, 2025. So congratulations, guys. Mike and I both love the show, and we get inspired by it often, and love the conversations that erupt around the different subjects that you cover in audio drama production. You guys are doing such a great service to the community, and just want to let you know we really appreciate it. So happy 100th, guys. So what advice would I have for myself before starting to create audio drama? There's a couple things I would say to myself right off the bat. I would say, first off, please start this 20 years earlier, because it would be nice to have started in our 20s to do this particular show. The other advice I would have would be to think a little bit about the name.
Hello, my name is David K. Barnes. I am the creator and head writer on the podcast sitcom Wooden Overcoats. And I wanted to say a few words about writing exposition, because exposition is something which all writers have trouble with, including me. What information do you convey to an audience that'll help them understand and get on board with your premise or your episode, your series? And how do you do that exposition effectively? Because the bad way to do exposition, and we've all done it, is to say, oh God, there are a lot of things the audience needs to know here to understand what's coming later. I'll do it all in one go with lots of dates and names and backstory stuff and hope that they remember it so we can get on to the interesting bit. But exposition fulfills two functions, and it's easy to forget that. One is to inform an audience of necessary information. But two, exposition helps to set the scene. It gets the story going. It hooks and intrigues the listener, or at least it should do. And so if you want the exposition to be that bit before the interesting stuff, you're sort of doing it wrong. And we've all done that in first drafts. The example I want to give of exposition that really focuses the attention of the audience in a way which is incredibly conducive to getting on board with a premise and does it excitingly is a TV series from the 1960s called The Prisoner. It's a British program, action-adventure series about a man who resigns from his job and is kidnapped and wakes up on a mysterious island and has to try and escape. The premise of The Prisoner is incredibly easy to give because it's all there in the title sequence. And I think the title sequence is a real masterclass of exposition. The first couple of minutes have no dialogue. It's just visual. It's very well directed, lots of great music. Man gets into is in a car. He drives into a place. He goes into an office. He resigns angrily. He's followed home and he is kidnapped. And it throws up lots of interesting questions. You know, who is this person? Why are they resigning? Why are they so angry about it? Why are they being kidnapped? But notably, for exposition, there's no backstory there, really. There's nothing. We don't know his name. We don't even know his job. We certainly don't know his parents or his views on this, that, and the other thing. But it's still exposition because it narrows us down onto what the pertinent points are to get on board with the story as quickly as possible. Afterwards, in the sequence, there's a bit of dialogue where this character wakes up on the island and he speaks to the person in charge. And the dialogue becomes a series of questions. Three of them in particular, at the very beginning, the first dialogue you hear in the series. Where am I? What do you want? Whose side are you on? Those are the questions asked. The answers, where am I? In the village. Boom, we know roughly where we are. We don't know what the village is. We don't know where it is. But that will all come later. But for now, that's all we need to know. What do you want? Information. We know why this person has been sort of kidnapped, what it is the people here want, but what is that information? Why is it important? We don't know, but it's enough to ground us in what's happening right here and now, and it gives us the fundamental bone of contention for the rest of the series. And the last question, whose side are you on? The answer, that would be telling. Really points to this combative, aggressive relationship between these characters, which is going to go on from then on. The sequence does go on a little bit longer. There's a little bit later about what these characters should call each other, notably not their real names. But really, the title sequence of The Prisoner boils everything down to essential components of drama. And I find that really, really interesting. And it's how to really convey an exciting premise in an entertaining way. And there's so much information there that is left out because you just don't need it. I found this very useful when I was doing the opening sort of titles for Wooden Overcoats, the sitcom I write. I really wanted a sentence that, or a couple of sentences that very quickly summed up what the series was about in terms of its story and the conflict of the series. And I spent ages trying to work it out. And in the end, we have the sentence, Rudyard Funn runs a funeral home in the village of Piffling Vale. It used to be the only one. It isn't anymore. And that's it. That's at the beginning of nearly every episode. And it sort of tells a listener, the main character, where they are, and what's the fundamental point. You know, they used to have this business and now there's someone else. And that's what the series is about. We've tweaked it slightly for the second series to better focus on what that second series is about. And that's coming out soon. But it's something that I only learned by looking at some of these other programs of how to effectively boil things down to the real essentials that an audience needs to know to get on board with your story as quickly as they can, to get hooked, to get really interested. And for me, when I don't know how to go about it, I think about those three questions at the beginning of The Prisoner. Where am I? What do you want? And whose side are you on? And that find that really focuses the mind. So if that's helpful to you, please go away and use that. You know, do check out The Prisoner. It's a wonderful show. And also tune into Wooden Overcoats, of course.
This is Boyd Barrett, creator of Roswell, B.C., before the crash. If I could give myself advice before I started producing an audio drama, it would be pretty simple. Just go ahead and do it. If I had known then the things I know now, I might not have started at all. First of all, I didn't know the time commitment it would demand, and I didn't know the logistical nightmares it would bring. Plus, I didn't know there were that many extremely professional audio dramas already out there. Now, that would have intimidated me. But I was just bold enough to believe I could use the medium to tell a story, because that's what I am at the core. I'm a storyteller. Now, there are plenty of audio drama producers out there who can run rings around me technically, and I'm okay with that. What I want to give people is an engaging story inhabited by very interesting characters. And I've built a decent-sized audience, around 1,000 consistent listeners so far. And then an extra added bonus I didn't foresee was being part of a worldwide community of audio drama producers who bend over backwards to help each other out. We share voice talent and tons of encouragement. And I haven't smelled one whiff of a competitive spirit in this group. Now, I've been in the arts for years, and believe me, that's rare. And what I know beyond a shadow of a doubt is this: no one else can tell the story that's being created in my mind. Getting that story out there while entertaining 1,000 people, that's well worth the time and effort. And you might just find a whole new circle of friends. So, if you're trying to decide whether or not to start up an audio drama, here's my advice. Just go ahead and do it.
Hey, this is Owen McEwen. I'm a voice actor from New Jersey, USA. Here's the advice I'd give myself before I started making audio drama. In audio drama production as well as audiobook production, I would tell myself to manage room tone effectively. Do not mute silence. It is completely unnatural sounding and it's jarring, especially since there will always be a slight amount of room tone behind the dialogue. Even if the room tone is a bit noisier than you'd like, remember that special effects, ambient soundscapes, and scoring will hide those sins, especially in audio drama. A capable producer will be able to make separate actors sound as if they're in the same environment. But it sounds funky if your lines pop out of a dead silence or are too heavily gated.
Christiana Ellis and Fred Greenhalgh up next.
Be more firm when you want your friends to give you retakes. I don't want to overstate that point, but it's also true that there's a big difference between the project that you are trying to make as professional as possible and, hey, let's get our buddies together and put on a show. And so sometimes if you're kind of straddling the divide there, that can lead to some unevenness and frustrations that I struggled with a little bit. And I think that if I had been a little bit more confident early on in demanding, it's like, look, I'm taking this seriously and you're my friend, but if I'm going to have you do this for me, I need you to take it seriously too. Especially with online type productions, which is what I do, where I'm not there in a room with my actors. My actors are not in rooms with each other. Everybody's kind of recording in solo. And so that makes direction less automatic. And you have to be a little more proactive in order to accomplish anything.
Oh, the best piece of audio drama advice I ever got, which was definitely Roger Gregg. In my early days of sending him my stuff, and I didn't think it was that great. We were recording in WMPG, this community radio station. And it was a beautiful studio, but very community in every bad sense of the word, where like there's always the DJ going, in the next studio over, excuse me, can you turn off like the reggae at like, you know, 120 decibels? What? And it was very frustrating because we had no money to record anywhere else. And I was asking Roger Gregg about studios, and he said, "Fuck the studio! What do you need a studio for? They'll spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in Hollywood to make a studio when all you need is a portable recorder." Go. Oh, great. And he actually sent me the specs on the Rode NT4 microphone and a recorder I should use, and I just bought all this based on his recommendation. He'd just use it for Infidel, which is this magnificent story that had one of the few audio dramas that ever had an equestrian handler in it. And long story short, now I can actually afford a studio, but I still like recording on location. That seems to be how I'm known. So that's my advice.
Okay, hi. This is once again Vienna Jetschko from the Vienna Jetschko podcast, and I'm going to throw random advice at you for audio drama producing. Number your script pages. Fade in and fade out sound files. Record room sound. Have a glass of water next to you when recording. Turn off your phone while recording, unless you're recording with your phone. Listen out for airplanes and cars going by when recording. You have to hit that record button. You have to make sure you hit that record button. Get a room you can record in. A closet with duvet covers is just fine. Don't let your roommates flush while you're recording. Tell the people you live with you need only 1 hour to record and they have to be quiet all the time. Try to avoid recording during the day because there will be airplanes, people, dogs, cars and all kind of other stuff that's ruining your recording. And also lawnmowers, I'm just hearing, God. Have fun. For God's sake, have fun. And it's going to be a big advice for me on audio drama. Have fun with it. If it's no fun anymore, quit it. You have to consider quitting. And if still something's stopping you from quitting and you are also not having fun, you have to find out what's stopping you from having fun. Either it's because you're doing this alone and you're overwhelmed, or because you don't want to do certain parts, or because you just want to do writing or just recording or whatnot, and then you have to get together with people or get yourself some help or try some other way around to make it work. And maybe you want to shorten down the amount of audio drama you want to put out. I guess it's okay to... I personally now cut down to 10 minutes every month because I can't do more than that. And I think you can also go like, you know, producing a feature-length audio drama over the course of a year. That's also fine. Nobody's pushing you. This is a personal decision. This is a personal thing. And it should be fun. If it's no fun, it's no use putting your time and effort into it. I want to share a little thing with you that I've come across myself doing production, and that's something I did not do for this recording because I know that either Matthew or Robert's going to listen through this, and I didn't want to ruin their ears. But usually I record in one session, like throughout. I print out a page and record the intro and the outro of my podcast. And what I do when I screw up, or if I want to signal myself that the segment ended because I just finished the intro, I clap very loudly or make a very loud sound. And this makes it possible for me to see on the sound file, like on the waveform, where the intro ends or the outro starts, or if that one's crap and I can completely ignore this, and when the good bits and pieces are starting. You can do this yourself too. Like if you're editing yourself, that's fine. And if you've told people beforehand that you're doing this, it's fine too. I mean, I guess they're going to watch this too when they're editing sound. But you never know, and you don't want to make people hurt their ears. Okay, a little advice on cover art, because I was part of an episode in the Audio Drama Production Podcast where I thought I had something to add to. Let's put it like that. I listened to a very nice episode by J. Daniel Sawyer at the NaNoWriMo Every Month podcast about cover art and how you can easily do it yourself, because he is a person who's very much do-it-yourself kind of mentality, which is very appealing. And he points out that you can inexpensively and easily create some nice artwork for your works of fiction. He there, of course, referenced to ebooks and books because he's mainly a writer. But the same goes for audio drama because, well, cover art is cover art. It's for audio drama, it might be a different size, like pixel-wise, but apart from that, it's pretty much the same. You need to get some kind of a artwork and then put your title on it and stuff like that. And if you want to get some advice on that, I would really point you in that direction and point you to NaNoWriMo Every Month, that's one word, .com, and search for question number 67 and listen to the episode and maybe get some inspiration for the artwork for your next audio series or something.
My name is Peter Grunbaum, and I'm the writer and producer of The Sting of the Dark Tower. Many, many years ago, I read a dystopian parallel universe story that was supposedly written by C.S. Lewis, but that he never finished. I immediately knew that I wanted to complete that story and adapt it as an audio drama. Last year, I decided, this is the year I'll do it. I found a mentor, wrote a script, hired actors, rented studio space, and learned sound editing. It turned out great, but the moment I put it on the internet, I became paranoid that C.S. Lewis's estate would find out about it and send me a cease and desist letter. So for a while, I was very careful about who I told about it, which in retrospect was silly. Here's the advice I would have given myself. If you do something creative with someone else's intellectual property and you put it out there for free, just shout about it from the rooftops. The internet is so vast and audio drama is just a tiny corner of it. Chances are no one is going to find you. And even if they do, they probably won't bother you. It's just not worth it to them. So get the word out however you can.
Cheers, Peter. And I'm probably legally obliged just to add that if you create anything out of somebody else's intellectual property, you do so entirely at your own risk. Okay, next up, do you fancy a trip to Boston? Here's Alexander Danner and Tanya Milojevic.
I would reassure myself that I will have people who are interested in doing this thing with me. As much as I was talking earlier about my love of doing the monologues, part of the way I structured my show was based on the worry that I wouldn't be able to convince anyone to play parts. And so I was very cautious about not getting too ambitious in the types of roles I was creating, limiting interactive dialogue so that it would be producible with fewer people. And then once we started, you know, there was a brief moment where we were worried about casting, and then suddenly we had plenty of people and wonderful, amazing people who are all very eager to be involved. So I would just, you know, urge myself to not be so cautious about that and be a little freer with my hand in the writing for those first few episodes that are much too narration heavy.
If I could talk to my younger self before I started producing audio drama, I would tell myself to never lose the enthusiasm and get as many people involved as possible and try to network as much as possible. And I don't know, I guess I would just say, don't worry, things are going to work out just fine. You'll meet plenty of people that will want to have you in their show, and you'll meet plenty of people that will love to voice act for you, and you'll get better at mixing. Because my biggest issue was mixing at the time. I felt like I was never going to improve at mixing. It was always going to suck. And I was never going to get a great microphone that was good enough for me to record with, not let alone a studio space to use. So I guess I just would have said, you know, keep working hard. You'll get there. Just one step at a time.
I'm Daniel from the Night Keep, and actually from a whole crap ton of other stuff. Started off with Throne of Anguish, and that's my symphonic death metal, but also where I did my first audio drama production. And advice, this is kind of the topic of this one, is what advice would I give to myself if I found a DeLorean and hit 88 miles per hour and went back and met the past Daniel? What would I tell me as far as doing audio drama productions? Because I know in the past, whenever I was doing it, there's always this nagging little thing, this little seed of doubt in the back of my mind. At least it was with me. It might be with anyone listening, you know, within earshot or bandwidth shot of this. But, you know, it's like audio drama. How stupid is this? Are we in the 1940s again? I mean, what in the world? Why am I even doing this? But at the end of the day, what I tell people, what I will tell you, anybody within the sound of my voice, what I will always tell you is do not let anyone, I'm going to hit my table, don't let anyone tell you what you cannot do. Do not let anyone tell you that what your passion is a waste of time. Do not let anyone ever, ever tell you that you can't do this. A lot of this with me with audio drama production has stemmed from the fact that I wish I could make a movie and wish I could make a game. And unfortunately, because of life and adulting, I don't have the time to do that. But what I do know is music. And I guess I know I enjoy making music. So I take the strengths of making music and just make campfire tales. I mean, look at the popularity of Creepypasta. So what would I have told me in the past? The same thing that I just told you. Is it, don't let anyone tell you what you can't do. Just do it. If you have a passion for writing stories, then do it. In this day, in this era, especially in the information technology era that we are in, you can create podcasts and you can make your stories and you can give them more flair. I mean, believe me, I love reading. I read every night. I absolutely love it. I also love listening to some badass audio productions. I really love it, especially you can tell, and I'm not even going to talk about quality. Okay, well, that's a whole nother. We'll just leave that over there, because at the end of the day, I'm going to tell you, just do it. I'm going to tell me in the past, because I actually found a DeLorean. So I'm about to go back in the past and kick past Daniel's ass and just make him keep on going, keep doing this. But that's it. Don't let anyone tell you can't do it. Just do it. If you write a story, do it. What would I have told past me? Because I'm always fretting about recording. You got a phone. That's what I'm recording on now. So pardon the audio. I'm going to try to pass through it, clean it up just a little bit, you know, but still, you got a recorder, record it. I know you get tired of hearing the same tropes. It's like, oh, you got a camera, make your movie. Hey, you got a camera, just go out and make your movie. Well, essentially, it is that. You got a recorder, record your story. Start it out like an audiobook, man. Be like Otis Gyrie and just, you know, give you your narration to it and do it. Build upon that. There are so many options available and free programs out there nowadays. Now, I would assume that you have a computer. Most people do. You got a computer. If you don't, that will be your goal. Get you a computer and then go to Walmart or wherever. I don't know, wherever you're listening. Then go to your local store and get you one of those $10 Logitech gaming headphones. You know, it's the little headset with a little microphone. Boom, done. You've got it. Put that on. Tell your story. Now, of course, before you go to make the audio drama thing, you kind of want to have a story. So that's your first thing. Don't get overwhelmed. Know that you can do it and then go do it. So write your story. and then just map out how you want to do it. Don't worry about recording quality or nothing like that. You have a computer, Google Audacity. That's like the podcaster's best friend for the podcasters who don't have like the big DAW recording software. I mean, you use Pro Tools or Reason, Ableton. I use FL Studio. I'm not bragging. I'm just saying that's what I use for everything I've done because that was the program I bought years ago. But you can use Audacity. It's free. You got a phone. Like I said, I'm recording on my phone now. You can record your audio on your phone. You can patch it in through Audacity. You can clean it up. Add some sound effects. You need some feet shuffling. I just did that. Look, you can just do that. If you've got a place to walk, you've got footsteps, chair creaks, you can rub things together. I mean, if you've got a pen, I've got a pair of sunglasses, but I guarantee you, let's see. Well, that could go for like dropping a 9mm on a table. So, I mean, I don't know why I thought of a 9mm, but that's it. Use these tools. And that's what old Daniel needs to know. Don't focus on recording quality. It's not exactly Citizen Kane here. I wish it was, kind of, sort of, but not really, because I don't care about Citizen Kane. I care about horror, and I care about fantasy, and I like barbarians and Dungeons and Dragons and really scary, heinous stuff. So use that. So, old Daniel, whenever you're going to listen to this, I want you to know to just do it and stop being such a little baby. Just write your story and just do it. And for everybody else, I'm not going to condescend you like that because I don't know you. So let's keep it kind of friendly. Just, I respect you. Look, I respect anyone with a DIY mentality. That's do it yourself. You got the dream, you got the vision, you got the goal, go do it. So once again, this has been Daniel. I'm Daniel from The Night Keep. You can find me at nightkeep.com, Bandcamp, Spotify, look up The Night Keep. And once again, congratulations on your 100th episode. And I really appreciate all the support that you give everybody. I mean, it's just, as there aren't too many of us out here. Well, I guess that podcasting is actually huge and like audio drama has gotten even bigger. So I guess there is a lot of, you guys are responsible for a lot of that support. And I really thank you for indulging me and for letting me ramble on this thing. So I'll catch y'all later.
Let's hear from Lindsay Harris-Friel and Eli McElveen now.
Sound design and special effects will not save your podcast, and too much can kill it. In audio drama, we're very fortunate. We can build sets with sound. It's very liberating for writers because we can put our characters wherever we want and we can create any kind of character we want. But too much sound effects and too much frequencies and panning and so forth is distracting and it's dizzying for the audience. I can remember hearing a podcast with so much panning in it that it made me seasick. Our first episodes in Yarn Socks Arising are a special effects smorgasbord, but feedback from listeners indicates that it's distracting and it's off-putting and it makes the story more difficult to understand. I would also recommend get the best director that you can who cares about your story. They can help you through rehearsal, readings, and rewrites to bring out the best in your script. Thank you, Matthew and Robert, for all you do. Because of your podcast, I feel a lot less lonely and in the dark as an artist. And everyone, thank you very much for listening. I'm looking forward to more new audio drama. If you're interested in what we've created, you should go to yarnsaxarising.com. That's spelled JARNSAXARISING.com. It's a podcast about Norse mythology, wind farming, corporate malfeasance, and revenge tragedy.
I would say start small, except that I think it was just something that I had to get out of my system to try telling stories that were where I was throwing in everything in the kitchen sink. Yeah, just instinctively, I tried to toss in every idea and every cool-sounding character, and I think I had to try that out and to realize in producing it that it's a massive amount of work, obviously, and to experience that and then to learn to pare down from there. I've been working on this new series that's a spin-off from Alba where it is just three main characters with a few bit parts. It's all set in one place and with much shorter episodes. I think that's something that I had to be kind of ready for. I don't think I could have done a one-off story before now. I had to learn by trying these ridiculously ambitious things. but at the same time, learn to know what your limits are and how much you can realistically tackle on the first go.
Hi, this is Matt Leong of Matt Leong 13 Productions. So if I could give myself advice on how to make audio drama, before I started making audio drama, what kind of advice would I give? First thing I would do is to tell myself, don't wait, just make audio drama. I've known way too many people who never started anything because they were waiting for the stars to align, waiting for the better computer, save up for a really nice microphone, the right actor, or the script to be perfect. It never happens. You have to start somewhere. Second, time management is important. For many of us, this is a labor of love, and we have to make time to do this. Just don't put your life in peril. Make time for your kids and your partner. So it may mean that you have to get up a little earlier, or go to bed a little later, or postpone watching Game of Thrones. With this sacrifice comes the satisfaction of making something in the world that came out of your head. That is yours, and no one else can take that away from you. Third, be organized. Make up a system, or borrow someone else's. For example, I have a dedicated audio drama folder. Within that folder, I have my open projects. Within that open projects folder is my DAW file folder, which becomes quite the Russian doll. Inside this folder is the folder with the actor's lines, a folder for sound effects, and a folder for music. Also, label your files properly. I will usually use the name of the project or an abbreviation. So in this case, I would label this file ADPP100, abbreviated for Audio Drama Production Podcast Episode 100. Next, I label the file for what it is, like lines or sound effects. So then after ADPP100, I would add underscore lines. Then I label what version it is. For the sake of argument, let's say I did three versions of this recording. So the label would be ADPP100 underscore lines underscore V3 for version 3. I save everything. There are too many times to count when I do something, change it, then have to go back to the previous version. This is only an example of how my OCD addled brain works, so do what works for you. Fourth, keep the scale of your project manageable. Know your limits. I try to work with small stories and a small cast, because no matter what I do, it grows out of control. It always requires more sound design, more tweaking of the script, more music. Start small, level up, and work your way up to bigger projects. Then most importantly, fifth, back up constantly. Nothing is a bigger blow to the morale of a production than see all your work disappear into a puff of ones and zeros. So, that's my two cents on Audio Drama 101. Now go make some audio drama and keep on casting.
Hi, I'm Christopher Green, and I work on the mystery audio drama Shadows and Daylight, as well as the comedy audio drama Jimmy, Sam, and Tommy. You can find these two at shadowsanddaylight.ca and jimmysamandtommy.weebly.com. A piece of advice that I wish I had known when I started making audio drama was to really nail down the scripts of the entire first season before recording. It's hard to be patient enough to wait until you've written an entire season to start recording, and it might not fit the style of your show. But for me, working with volunteer actors, I found it's a lot easier to get commitment from the actors if they have the entire season that they can record in one shot. Some of them may need to do multiple recording sessions to record it all, but the point being is, if you can get everyone recorded nice and quickly, you have a lot less to worry about in the commitment department. Life happens, and when you're working with volunteers and you don't have a contract or pay to keep them on the job, sometimes they have to leave the show. And if you're working one show at a time, you may have only been able to record that person for 3 or 4 episodes within a 2-year time. And if that person in 2 years needs to move on to other things in their life, then you need to recast after only 3 episodes. So my advice is, write the entire season and then do your casting. And at that point, get your actors to record the entire season at once or in a few sessions in a row. That way, you've got nothing to worry about for that entire season. Also, ensure that each of the people that you're working with are very committed to the project. If they can catch the same vision for the project that you have, it makes it a lot easier. So if they can be involved in other ways other than just acting, it will keep them in the process during the waiting time from sessions, which keeps their head and their interest in the game for a lot longer. Anyways, I hope this advice was helpful to you today, and I hope you check out my dramas, and congratulations on the 100th episode.
Hey, this is Paul Sading of
Atheist Apocalypse, which you can find at atheistapocalypse.com, and the new audio drama Found, which you will be able to find at foundstories.com when I go live. I want to thank the ADPP guys for this opportunity to share a What Would I Do minute with you. If I'd given myself some advice, there's a lot of things I could say. I'll focus on one tidbit because it seems to be, at least in general spirit, a thing that troubles a lot of people who are new to AD. And it's this. If I could turn back the clock, I would tell myself, Paul, manage your expectations. What are my expectations? Clearly define them when it comes to downloads, money, category, prominence, strategy, publicity, cast and crew, production, product, all of it. What are my expectations? I should have asked myself that before I got into it and clearly identified those before I even started. For example, what could I reasonably have hoped for in terms of downloads or financial support for Atheist Apocalypse when I launched it last summer? I'm actually doing this for myself with Found as I'm finishing the writing for the first season and starting to cast it. Are you starting as a brand new person into the industry, or are you leveraging an existing platform? Do you already have a show, maybe of some other form, format, genre, or category? Maybe another audio drama even. Maybe a blog. Can you leverage something like that, or are you literally starting from scratch when it comes to this? That should form a little bit of your expectations. Which category is best for my show? I initially launched Atheist Apocalypse in comedy because I thought the satirical nature of the show would fit better there. I was wrong. I should have started in the performing arts and left it there. Do I even care about being seen as a major player? Seriously, ask yourself that question. Do you care to be the Black Tapes, or are you happy creating and knowing that others are enjoying it? Be honest with yourself. If you want to be the new Black Tapes, be honest when you do that mirror check. That will drive a lot of expectations and your reactions to a lot of things that are going to happen to you as you progress in this genre. How big or how small of a cast do I want? When I started Atheist Apocalypse, we were massive, almost 20 people. It was way too much. We got through 2 seasons somehow, and now with season 3 starting next month, we have really trimmed that roster to the people who I know I can count on, who bring it each and every episode. I encourage you to really manage your expectations. It will be easier for you to grow than to trim. That gets awkward. Trust me. How serious are you about your product, how it sounds, how it's packaged? Early on in Atheist Apocalypse, this was a neat thing, a neat project. And because I wasn't connected in the community, I leaned on the talents of friends. Fortunately, I met an incredible partner, and we've improved our sound vastly. Had I been a stickler for only top-notch quality sound at the beginning, the show might have never seen season 2, never mind season 3 coming out next month, and season 4 already in writing. But folks, this has got to be done in stages. There will and there should be changes over time. What are your expectations? What are those distinct periods? Are you going to have to look at them annually? Maybe it's by season. Maybe it's by product, by production. Define that for yourself before you even start. And then lastly, remind yourself every single time that you feel that cognitive dissonance, that you feel that rub because something's not matching those expectations. Remind yourself why you started an audio drama in the first place. I want to thank the gents over at Audio Drama Production Podcast and all the wonderful members of the audio drama community. It's a beautiful community to be part of, and I'm absolutely thrilled to be considered one of you. To new audio drama creators, welcome. Have fun and share your art with the world. This has been Paul Sading of Atheist Apocalypse over at atheistapocalypse.com and Found, which will soon be found at foundstories.com.
Hi, Matthew. This is Rick Coast, the writer and producer of The Behemoth, also Scotch, and in November, Briar Lane. Now, this is in response to the question you had about what advice I would have given myself or someone new to the genre before starting their own audio drama. Probably the best advice I have is to listen to as much as possible. And I don't just mean modern shows, but classic old-time radio like Gunsmoke and X-1, for example. Gunsmoke especially. It's a classic for a reason. You can learn a lot about dialogue, scene setting, and even subtle effects just by listening to it. Now, writers often tell new authors to read and to read constantly, and the same thing applies to audio drama. I listen to a lot, and I always come away with something that I want to try or even a few things that I want to avoid. It's a constant learning experience, and I hope that what I do improves because of it. And so, in a sense, just be a sponge.
Thank you very much, Rick. And I hope you've been a big old sponge yourself throughout this episode, because we're floating in a bath of knowledge now, aren't we? Would you like me to scrub your back, or would that be a bit weird? It would. Okay. Well, in that case, we're done. Let's go and get dried and put some clothes back on. Remember, you'll find links to all the contributors' works in the show notes at audiodramaproduction.com. Send them some love, subscribe to their shows, and spread the word. And I guess I'll see you next time.